Welcome back to the Hardline. Enter at your own risk.
The Hardline, 5-9 The Fan, Kevin S, 5-9@fan.com. I have never heard this song in my life. and so, sorry about to all of you who are like me and like good music. I am former Missouri wide receiver TJ Moe, along with the voice of your Slew Billikens, Bob Ramsey, who's wearing a Slew Billikens baseball shirt today, supporting the entire school. Rock, I don't want to hear it.
Listen.
First pitch dinner tonight.
I accept journey jokes. If you want to make every single boardroom band joke in the world, fine. But to not respect the fact that "Love and Touch and Squeezing" is a solid song by Journey, that's where you're crossing a line, TJ. I need you to learn the classics. Nah. Turn on some Smokey Robinson, sir.
Never heard it. Not interesting. The only thing I like is Jackie Robinson.
What are we doing?
That's it.
Here?
That's the only Robinson I like. Jackie was good job. 42 all the way. All right, let's get into this, boys and girls. More football talk. This is fun, and I love just picking. I sat today and just picked out all my favorite interesting stories. Especially when you have old versus new, there's endless storylines.
Yeah, I mean, right.
And so you have two guys we talked about yesterday. Actually, I have not brought up the Drew Brees thing yet. I want to get into that at some point. Two guys, Drew Brees and Andy Reid, who with two more wins each could put themselves in a different stratosphere than they're considered to be right now. I love that storyline. You have a 23-year-old with a rocket arm who, if he somehow pulled this off, would probably be considered the greatest 23-year-old season ever. Rock, you can let Q in if you'd like. You have Jared Goff and Sean McVay. Sean McVay would be, like, if he pulled this off, he's already losing all his assistants. If he pulled this off at age 30, he's going to be 33. His birthday is, like, January 24th. So he's going to be 33 years old when he wins the Super Bowl. That look out, right? I mean, it's you win a Super Bowl now in L.A., that's how you win fans over. Like, this is the story of L.A. If you're winning Super Bowls out there and they still don't care, you need to move the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
They did a poll. The L.A. Times does a poll every year. And it's not a poll about – it's not like a conglomerate poll where you can get – you know, it's not like the Heisman voting where you vote 1, 2, 3 and, you know,
right.
You get certain points for each one. It's they ask every person, which team is your favorite in L.A.? And the Lakers were number one with, like, 30-something percent. And then the Dodgers were – number two, it's, you know, right around there. And then the Rams were third, 8%. They're like the Clippers. Nobody really cares. So this could change L.A. You go win a Super Bowl, and then you go move into a new place?
Yeah, I'm sure when they were decent, those numbers were a lot different.
Well, they're decent now, and this poll was just done.
But, I mean, but what my point is, when they had been there, when did they move from Cleveland? 40-something, 48, whatever it was. And so, you know, you developed the fan base over decades.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go, and maybe people didn't care, probably didn't,
mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't a great product. Now you come back, and if you can come back with a splash, like you're saying, it can, I think it can, and I'm not saying that you're going to see Hollywood superstars on the sideline dancing like Diane Cannon and Jack Nicholson during Showtime in the 80s. But I think the profile can and will change. In particular, if you can win and win again and be a winning, not a winning record, but winning in the playoffs as you go into that new building.
Right.
That this could kind of be the beginning of that swell.
That's right. So you dive into all the different storylines and, I love Sean McVay. I have become indifferent towards the Rams. I don't actively root against them. I just don't care either way now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of them. I'm not a fan. I know a lot of people are really bitter, and some people like John have kept their fandom. I'm right in the middle. I kind of moved on. That's okay. To me, they're like mm-hmm. the Seahawks. Okay, sure. That's you know, turn on the TV and
right.
watch the Ravens play. I don't care. But I do love Sean McVay. I think for anybody to succeed at a young age like this and innovate the way he has is unbelievable for the
league. Can you put in a sentence or two or a very short paragraph what what has made him so good so young?
That'd be a tough one.
Wade Phillips.
That's a large part of it. That is, this is similar, by the way.
That was only two words. I'm not even going to give you a sentence on that. But no, that's good. So by that, do you mean, now give me two more sentences on that in particular.
Wade Phillips and I would say logical and shrewd personnel moves. Now, all that said, it sounds like I'm taking credit away.
Right.
No. The organization did a terrific job of bringing in a young offensive coach that obviously relates to his quarterback, which they basically brought in as the franchise. But they also made sure that he had the proper defensive staff and, more importantly, a former head coach, a veteran of the NFL, mm-hmm. and a great defensive mind to supplement a young man going through the natural maturation process as a leader of an organization.
You guys may already know this, but enlighten me a little bit, or even speculate if you don't know the dynamic of a young guy going in, you know, has Phillips there, has organizational people there, and not feeling like the kid, but feeling comfortable enough in his own skin in that situation to lead. That's not easy.
No, and it's, you know, having been over at Rams Park for a year and a half and watching one head coach and then watching Joe Vitt as an interim head coach, I'm not sure that people comprehend the fact just how much these guys do in overseeing an organization. Just like I'm not sure that people understand what it's like to be a head football coach or a head basketball coach at a major university. I mean, it's time-consuming
mm-hmm.
because your time is desired from every aspect of the job, whether it be alumnus or major sponsors with an NFL team, whether it be players, whether it be coaches, whether it be the front office, game planning, you know, these guys.
Facilities, people, whatever, yeah.
Everything.
Media, all these things, yeah.
Even to the point where I know that there was one time, I can't remember if it was March or one of the other coaches, that was sent down to the practice field to make sure that there was proper blockage from the windows of the hotel across the street.
I do remember that, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, that's how it's just silly, but there's so many different aspects that go into this thing. But when you got a guy like Wade Phillips who's been through it and has been a part of football for an eternity, Sean McVay also had that advantage. Growing up in an NFL family,
mm-hmm.
you know, he sort of had that feel. But then you look at these moves. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I was sort of ho-hum with it, but Robert Woods has proven to be just an incredible pickup. Has just become a clutch guy. Andrew Whitworth has made a world of difference. Much to my surprise, John Sullivan might be having his best year ever with this football team, you know, in all seriousness. And, you know, even some of the draft picks. I mean, people don't – it's the old saying, you don't know what you have until you lose it. I think whether you're an NFL fan or a Rams fan, you now know how much Cooper Kupp meant to this football team, in particular in the red zone. This team has almost become inept in the red zone in the truest sense.
It's true.
And then defensively, you know, some of the moves that they made, you know, was terrific. And, by the way, Ndamukong Suh finally showed up for a game. Ndamukong Suh had a very solid game against the Dallas Cowboys.
He did.
You know, and those, you know, that makes a difference. I think this weekend you're going to see everybody's talking about the Saints haven't given up 100-yard rushers since, like, week 6 or week 13 or something of last year and this, that, and the other. I don't think people understand how huge this loss is to Sheldon Rankins. And it's, every series that passes deeper that you get into the game is going to make a much bigger difference. Because the guy that would come in to give Rankins a breather, now all of a sudden you're reaching down further in the depth chart to bring someone in to give him a breather. The loss of Rankins is monstrous for this football team defensively.
Your heart rate's 84.
83, 84.
He's sitting here talking about the Rams and his heart
rate. He's getting fired up.
You know, so, no, I really do think the Rams will win this game because last but not least, Bob, to answer your question now in 17 pages as opposed to a sentence.
That's all right. We got it going.
Is the single biggest difference maker in the playoffs this year to date has been C.J. Anderson.
Isn't that amazing? What a crazy story.
Whose only job during the week is to go eat more Twinkies.
Is that the fattest ram's tailback you've seen?
He looks like Jerome Bettis, so no.
No, Bettis was never that fat.
And not when he was with
the
Rams.
He was thick. Right.
He was
but
fat
he wasn't
when he was
fat.
With the Steelers
right.
later.
Right. He was definitely thick when he was here. He did get fat then.
Yeah.
I mean, but Anderson's just fat. I mean, Anderson, after like carry five, literally, he was reaching up to the ref to get help on Sunday to get picked up. I'm serious. Did you see that?
Yes.
On one occasion, he literally put his hands up like the ref was going to help
Bro,
him
Bro, pull me up. And Ed Hockley's long retired, so there's nobody strong enough to pick up that guy.
So I was in a during a time, and rightfully so, and there were moves that Mike even made. I still remain very close, very good friends with Mars. There's moves that Mike made that haunted him. There's no as great a guy as he is, there's no way he should have stuck with Larry Marmee like he did.
Mm-hmm.
No way. I don't know that he'll ever admit that publicly, but he's got to know that. So, I mean, as an organization, there were times over the last three decades, and in particular in times here in St. Louis, where that front office was inept, completely inept.
Yep.
And they deserved all the blame that they had coming. The maneuvering by this organization over the course of the last 3 years, arguably, in all seriousness, arguably the best of any team.
They've done a 180 from when they were here.
For a short term. I agree with that. And I think we talked about this a little bit earlier this year. They are all in today because I don't think they're set up well 3 years from now.
They have a 2-year window.
Yes.
This year and next year. But the fact of the matter is, all of a sudden now I have far less trepidation than I did before, because as they get older, there's also money's coming off the book. So based on their supplementation up to this point, based on recent drafts, I'm going to sort of buy in that they may be able.
To me,
certain guys like Andrew Whitworth, you just can't replace overnight.
Yeah, he's 37. He may retire after this year if they win it.
Oh, if they win it, I'd be shocked if he didn't retire.
Yeah. You're going to have to pay Goff here soon. And like, this is year three, so they're going to have to pay him if they pick up the option anyway a whole bunch. And after that, they're really going to have to pay him if they want to keep him around. Todd Gurley signed his new contract, and it's a big deal for a running back. So that everybody else is allocating a certain percentage of their team, they gave a whole bunch of money to Todd Gurley. So he's making far more. He's got the biggest running back contract in the league until Bell signs next year. And similarly with Aaron Donald, signed a massive contract, right? So you have big contracts that are going to be coming that typically cripples you for the future if you have three in those spots. Now, Donald's worth paying. I don't disagree with that. The one that I think you did too early, and I'm not sure is going to end up working out, is Todd Gurley. And the reason is because you have drove him into the ground. Here are his carries by year since he's been in the league. 229, 278, 279, and 256 this year when he missed multiple games. So running backs have a shelf life even shorter than receivers. Because receivers, you can be crafty and still
Your
be good later in life.
Negativity is making my heart rate go up.
You can be good later in life. Even if you lose your speed, you're crafty. You figured it out enough. I mean, guys play for a long time. Antonio Brown, by the way, this year lost a step, and he was unbelievable. But he wasn't as fast as he was in years past. Todd Gurley is the one I'm worried about.
And yet Antonio Brown was still a difference maker.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. But he just wasn't the same cat. So that's my point at receiver. If you lose a step at running back, you can go from very productive to useless overnight.
Yeah.
And so we'll see what happens there. But
he's still a very physical runner.
Oh, right now, no doubt. And I think he will be for the next 2-3 years. It's after that, though, you may be
the body takes a toll, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but I know exactly what you're saying, but you could say that about virtually any team in the NFL.
You could. They just didn't pay as much.
2 or 3 year windows, but you could go team by team and look at various costs.
Sure.
What they do over the course of the next couple years with the draft, because I'm sitting there amused by the Michelin man, what he's doing now, because you just got to stand and applaud. I mean, that dude's picking up monster yardage in incredibly key situations. I mean, C.J. Anderson has become money in clutch situations. I'm not banking on Anderson pass this year. Seriously.
No. CJ said, you're fattening him up to soften defenses up. Let him run the ball 13 times. That way when Gurley comes through, they're like, no. Good God, now he's moving fast and he's muscular. Like,
I don't think you count on him past the Super Bowl championship buffet line. That'll be the last big run for him.
High cholesterol.
I will tear up if he's in the Super Bowl line. I'll tear up, get a little emotional.
Because there won't be any left for you. So, anyway, to bring this full circle, these were just a few of the major storylines. I think there's a few teams set up really nicely for next year. The Colts have like $100 million in cap space, and they were already good. I mean, they were so far ahead of schedule. This is like Georgia 2 years ago. Georgia 2 years ago, everybody thought, yeah, they'll be okay. And they won the national title game. And you're like, oh, my gosh, that they weren't supposed to be good yet. And then, obviously, they were good again this year and will continue to be good. That is Indianapolis right now. They have a legit quarterback. They have a legit difference maker on defense. They figured out their offensive line, and they have $100 million in cap space. They might be good for 10 years. The Patriots are always good. I think the Saints are in good shape. Like, you have a few teams. The Chiefs, we'll see. This may be a one-year thing for the Chiefs for being this good, this explosive, this crazy. And then the Rams, I'm not buying 2 years from now. So we will see. The NFL is in pretty good shape, and anytime you do have Pat Mahomes, he can make me look stupid tomorrow. So I did want to talk about one other thing, John, as it relates to Drew Brees. Drew Brees is on the cusp of getting himself into an entirely new level. You have, I think, a really undeniably solid group of guys who have won two Super Bowls. There's only one guy that I think doesn't really fit in that group, and that's Eli Manning. Everybody else who's ever won two Super Bowls, you look at and you're like, okay, I recognize that name, will recognize that name forever. That is a spectacular group. You can run through the list of guys, which I will get that pulled up here shortly. There are a lot of average guys who've won one Super Bowl, and I think that is where you need to exit if you are Drew Brees. That Joe Flacco's won one Super Bowl. No one even thinks he was good outside of that playoff run. Mm-hmm. He wasn't even that good that year. He had one good playoff run. He won a Super Bowl. Brad Johnson, on the back of an unbelievable defense in Tampa, won a Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer, who we all remember more as a broadcaster than a quarterback, he won a Super Bowl. Nick Foles, obviously, nothing too crazy special outside of the playoff run.
Right.
But the guys that have won two Super Bowls, Tom Brady, multiple Super Bowls, Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Terry Bradshaw, Troy Aikman, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, John Elway, Jim Pluckett, Bob Greasy, Roger Staubach, and Bart Starr. Every one of those people are in a different stratosphere. Mm-hmm. And then you have Eli Manning, who I think is the outlier. Eli Manning had two crazy years, and he was Tom Brady's kryptonite, and it just worked. Okay. When you move from the Joe Flacco list to the Joe Montana list, you have now changed your entire legacy. For him...
I would agree. Yeah, that's fair.
For him, it's such a big deal because he's already there with his stats. He has 74,437 passing yards, most all time, by like 3,000 or 4,000. I think next closest has 70,000. Most completions all time, 6,586. Just and it's he's by the way, he's 40. He just turned 40 during this playoff run.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah. Which we can get into that at some point too, because we need to get used to old guys doing it. That is the new what's going to happen with modern.
That's a line I used a lot.
Well, it's true though. Modern medicine and modern like how to take care of your body and how to eat and everything is lengthening careers like crazy. And that will continue to be the truth. He's got 520 touchdowns, second all time to Peyton Manning, who's only 19 ahead of him. He will break that by week six next year.
Mm-hmm.
He's got one Super Bowl win and he's got one Super Bowl MVP. Break through and get the MVP in this one, you're in a different world. Kurt Warner won one. He's a Hall of Famer. Everybody loves Kurt Warner. Drew Brees goes from the Nick Foles group to the Peyton Manning group.
We talked about a little bit when we were talking about Baseball Hall of Fame. The difference in championships, what it means in each sport, and I think it means the most in perception in football.
Right. Now, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
100%. And it's ridiculous because no matter
what... It's the ultimate team game.
Yeah. No matter what anybody says, Dan Marino is one of the five greatest quarterbacks in the history of the game.
Loved him. He's so much fun to watch.
So did you... I don't even remember. I know he played in a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was alive. What year was that? 84 is when he set the touchdown record. Was it 84 that he went to the Super Bowl?
I don't know, man.
Okay.
It was in the 80s.
Did you watch it?
You weren't even a thought for mommy and daddy.
No, it was close, though. 90. So whenever that was, My big riff with Andy Reid is that he had real legit chances and still has not done it. It's 84. Okay, so that was the crazy year that he had, threw 48 touchdowns. Was that his only legitimate chance, Marino?
I mean, technically, he also lost in another conference final, two other conference finals.
Yeah,
the Dolphins.
Those were 12.
I don't think the man for man, the Dolphins, were ever clearly the best team in their conference.
And it seems to me, my recollection is, I don't have any data, and so if somebody wanted to call and prove me wrong, you would get no pushback from me.
Is Hockey Bob still on hold, by the way?
Except that the perception I always had was that they just, almost like the Big Red of the early 70s, they just didn't have the defense to keep up with what he was doing on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, if you want a comparison, they were a 215-point differential the year they went to the Super Bowl. The other 2 years where they were close, they were 108 and 94-point differential. So
I saw those teams. Like I said, I don't think they were ever clearly, even in the year that you discussed, clearly the best team. Let alone in the NFL, in the AFC.
They were always dangerous because of what he could do, but that doesn't mean you're a great team.
Right. See, and that's where a lot of people disagree with me with La Russa, is that I think there are a number of years that, despite what people want to say, La Russa maximized his talent because they were not the best team.
Oh, yeah.
In the National League that year.
Right.
I mean, La Russa.
Then when he had the best team I'd ever seen, they come up short because they were all banged up in the World Series. But, yeah, exactly. Those kind of things happen. That's right.
I think he says the same thing. Was that 04 or 05?
04.
04. I think, if memory serves correctly, I think Tony said the same thing. I think he said 2004 was his best team.
He did. I've heard him.
He said Warrior didn't like that. You put Plunkett over Eli, that's comical. Look at the careers. Plunkett's great story, but not close to Eli. Yeah, people
Plunkett
who watch. People who watch Plunkett.
Who said that?
That was Eastside Warrior.
Only looked at stats.
Warrior, if you're telling me that Eli Manning's a better quarterback than Jim Plunkett, I'm telling you, you're an idiot. You need to do your homework because you've just embarrassed yourself, your parents, your family lineage, and the Boy Scouts of America.
Oh, check the watch. Check the watch.
John.
112!
To your point about the championship games, that right, just because you go to the championship game doesn't mean you have a good team.
No.
Tom Brady in 2006 took them to the AFC title game with Rashay Caldwell as their leading receiver. Like, you can have nobody and just make it work. If you're a great quarterback, which Marino was.
Let's not forget, by the year.
During those days, the competition that Jim Plunkett was going up against, that was the heyday of the AFC in a truest sense. Phenomenal teams.
Phenomenal.
That Pittsburgh had to deal with. I mean, that Oakland had to deal with. Even with their own division. Denver, brutal. Chargers teams for a while, brutal. Steelers, obviously, as we know.
I mean, here's the thing. Just talking about quarterbacks, you brought up the Broncos. If the Denver Broncos never surround John Elway with any talent, all we know about him is getting the brakes beaten off of him in three different Super Bowls where they didn't even put up a fight until later on in his career. They put a good team around him. He wins two in a row. How do we view John Elway if it's just that first 12 years of career and him getting the brakes beaten off of him?
Well, guys like you would do it with your numbers and say, well, according to Fina Fina Fona, Homify,
that's,
you know, according
to offensive?
The,
yes.
According to the Babbitt of football,
that's
no,
Babbitt.
John Elway was one of the all-time greats no matter what happened, but they did what made the difference in the end. They got him a legit difference maker because for a couple years, Terrell Davis was as good as you were going to get.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Great example of what we were talking about yesterday with the Hall of Fame. Guy who didn't do it for 10 years even, but
he was the best.
And
for
everyone
a short
decided
period of time.
That what they saw for those 4 or 5
was
years
enough.
Was undeniably Hall of Fame talent.
This is the Kurt Warner argument. That's exactly what it is.
Yep. Yeah, injuries robbed him of.
He started later too.
Right.
Yeah, if he doesn't, I mean, if his finger doesn't, you know, blow up on him in New York or even, hell, in St. Louis the first time, what happens?
Well, and then concussions and, I mean,
he had the world's most famous pinky for a while.
Right.
I'll tell you what.
But he made it, so.
He did. And
people
he earned
recognized.
It. And he deserved it.
Did it again later on.
Doing it with that Arizona team.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Pure grit.
Looking back, though, he had two. Do you think Anquan Boldin's going to make the Hall of Fame?
No, but Bolden is the type of guy that you have to have a a legit respect for, because when he was young, not only was he good, but he was, for a time, one of the best, if not the best, blocking wide receiver in the NFL.
And had incredibly strong hands.
So annoying.
Like, I don't think there was a receiver with stronger hands than Anquan Boldin for a three-year period there.
He and Fitz, though, man. They work some magic.
Mike Hunt says Jim Kelly, and I think he's Jim right Kelly. There. We don't talk about him enough.
Jim Kelly's another terrific, terrific quarterback.
We really talk about good. Him all the time, but it's just because he keeps beating cancer.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Jim Kelly is one of those guys that, and the amazing thing is you always find certain guys
freaking Belichick
people miss on. And the only reason that Jim Kelly went to Miami was because Joe Pa insisted he was a linebacker, not a quarterback.
Isn't that amazing?
He wanted to go to Penn State.
How about that?
And Joe Pye says, no, you're a linebacker.
Hey, well, Johnny Manziel, that's some safety. High respect, though. You're going to Penn State, they're saying be a linebacker. That's Penn State.
The funny thing is, as tough as he was, he probably would have been a pretty good linebacker.
Yeah, you're seeing it on display right now. He's beat cancer like 19 times.
Again, when Joe Pye says you can play linebacker.
But that's, I mean, that's how that
is. It's amazing.
You know, it's just, and there's stories like that all the time that you'll find, you know, even in baseball. Even in baseball. Who was it? Well, hell, I don't know if it's Carlos Martinez. Is it Carlos? Who's the pitcher that Seattle insisted on being a shortstop that the Cardinals wound up picking up?
I don't recall.
Some young guy that the Cardinals wound up picking up. But anyhow.
I know who you're talking about. This, by the way, this Johnny Manziel asked Mac Brown should have been a safety. So I think RG3 as well.
TJ Moe should have been a safety.
That actually could have worked. You can be slow back there. You can't be a slow receiver.
Your emotion should have been jockey.
I would hold Tom Brady's if you want.
Oh, it's just so wrong. But he's honest.
You got to give him credit for that.
100% honest.
It makes us very uncomfortable, but the honesty's there, yeah.
I feel fine about it. So, anyway.
Sam Tuivasa?
Nah. Uh-uh. No. We're talking about a good player, Rock. So anyway,
You know what? It's the old theory. If you don't know the answer, either pose it as a question or shut up. I should just.
Does anybody know? Yeah. So anyway, there you go on Drew Brees. I do think that. So we can argue about the merits of should that be, like, should we think of them differently? And perhaps we in this room wouldn't. But I think it's indisputable that society would think of Drew Brees differently with multiple Super Bowl wins.
Yes. From a high plane to a higher one.
Yeah, over a 10-year period.
Yeah.
Right? He did this in 2009, beat Peyton Manning, and then he'd be beating maybe Tom Brady? Beat the two guys that made you less relevant during your era? It'd be a big deal.
You just want to talk about perfect pairings, though. Yeah. I mean,
Ham and eggs.
Parcells and ham and eggs, definitely. Parcells and Lawrence Taylor, perfect pairing. Go ahead.
Mike Hunt, another great point. He found it. Carlos Martinez, Boston Red Sox, wanted him to play shortstop.
Thank you very much, Mike Hunt. You have redeemed yourself.
Why'd you say it so fast?
Oh, no, that was the East Side. That was the East Side guy.
Who East Side Warrior screwed up.
East Side Warrior.
East Side Warrior came back for a second helping. Plunkett had Cliff Branch and Marcus Allen. What did he do in New England and San Fran, John? He was a game manager on a great team.
Well, San Fran, he was 119.
It's like asking Montana, what did Montana do in KC?
And New England.
Took him in an AFC title game.
He played with some of the worst teams in the history of football. No, the fact of the matter is, when you have the weapons available and you maximize them, that's what it's all about. Failure with inferiority can't be completely blamed on you or you or you. It's a collective group of suckies that make the difference.
What does that mean exactly?
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm trying to say, Bob?
Yes.
You know, I mean,
no, you don't,
simple.
Bob.
I mean, Steve Carlton. That's why to this day, that year that Steve Carlton won, 27, when the Phillies won like 60 games?
Yeah.
One of the greatest performances in the history of sports. Maybe the greatest.
Yeah, truly, truly amazing.
But you know what people would say today, don't you?
Well, wins
don't
matter.
The wins really don't matter. So, you know, I mean, Carlton was just extraordinarily lucky. Any pitcher could have done that under the right circumstances if he had the proper BABIP against.
His defensive independence.
There's no T in BABIP.
Let me tell you something. You say it the way you want to say it, I'm going to say it the way I want to say it.
But it would mean something different.
No.
Batting average against balls in trucks?
Let me tell you something. You got a left side of your face, you got a right side of your face. You're going to find out what a slap in a backhand is in a second.
Which hand are you going to use?
No, it might mess up your watch. It'll mess up your heart rate watch.
That's right. I have only one of them. 100% chance today of messing up a watch.
Hey, we got to go to break, though. We're going to be back talking some more football. It is interesting. It is the way the quarterback situation is set up. It is the young bulls trying to pass the old guard here. And, well, it's going to be fun. So we will be back in a bit to talk about that. It is the Heartline.